Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:33 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is May 2nd, and I'm at well, I've been attending virtually at least the MIT Technology Review's Emerging Tech Digital Conference today, and there have been several really interesting presentations that I think are worth just relating. But something that really just popped into my mind as I was watching all of this was what the market was like back in 2015. So the Nasdaq had rebounded exceptionally impressively from the lows in 2008, and it was right in the region of the peak from back in 2000. And what most people were worried about in technology at the time was that it had already gone too far, that the promise of a new technological evolution was too much, that there was too much promise and not enough evidence. So people had to, then in order to convince people that it really was a big deal, there had to be an argument that there are cycles. So, for example, in order to convince someone that this was a big technological innovation cycle, you would have to then also say, well, we're in a longer term cycle where there's very low interest rates, where there's lots of money available. And as long as that remains the case, then these higher growth companies will do well. And if one were to then think about that there is a money cycle and a technology cycle, and that usually what happens is that technological innovation continues day by day, but there are times in the market when it is valued very highly. There are times in the market when it isn't, and the times when it is generally coincide with abundant credit and liquidity. And the times when it is not valued highly tend to equate with those periods when interest rates are high and liquidity is not available. So back in 2016, there was obviously low interest rate environments, and then we saw the Nasdaq do exceptionally well. So once it broke out to new all-time highs in 2016, well, the index then went from 4,800 up to a peak of 16,800 over the course of the next 5 years. Now we're in an environment where there's a lot of argument going on, and there is an incredible excitement about the promise of artificial intelligence. And I've seen people today talking about it as comparable to the evolution of the iPhone. I saw one person saying that it was akin to the introduction of the steam engine. So there's incredible enthusiasm about the promise of artificial intelligence. But then we can think about, well, there are also challenges. One is that something that more than a few people mentioned is that the entire sector would not exist were it not for Facebook, or now called Meta, making all of their data open access about 5 years ago. And that provided all the AI innovators with the data sets they required to test on. So certainly there's that. And Meta has certainly rebounded very impressively since the lows in October and gone up to a point now where it's a bit overbought in the short term. So it wouldn't be that surprising to see some pause and consolidation. And more to the point is that they've fired a large number of people, and that was certainly helping the bottom line. But now it would be really beneficial if they were to abandon all this talk about the metaverse and get back to where their core efficiencies are. They were the ones that made the AI data set available, so one would have to assume that they are well versed in artificial intelligence, but I think most particularly where Microsoft's, or excuse me, where Meta's core competency is in creating the illusion of free will in social media. And instead, people tend to become addicted and basically consume whatever is put in front of them. And that is all algorithmically based. But I thought that then, listening to what people are saying, I saw two very different ways of talking about artificial intelligence. The first is from Microsoft. Now, they seem to have adopted a move fast and break things model. So that has been welcomed by investors, and the share rebounded in really emphatic fashion over the course of the last few weeks. And that was following their earnings, where they basically said that things are going to do exceptionally well in future because they'll be able to monetize artificial intelligence. And the person from Microsoft today did not talk about ethics, guardrails, then AR, the copyrights or ownership of data in anything. What he was very clear to talk about was the future and the current way that it's now possible for them internally, at least, to create PowerPoint presentations with images and animations from just a simple text prompt. So that is going to massively reduce the time it takes to create a presentation, for example. Then there are lots of inputs that can be used in Excel with an AI assistant. So it looks like that the promise of the little paperclip assistant from 20 years ago is now probably going to become a bit more efficient. So definitely Microsoft are jumping on the AI bandwagon with both feet, and they're going to ride it for all it's worth, and that's certainly helping the share price. But then we had a really I think insightful, measured, mature presentation from the CEO of C3.ai. And the number one thing he was talking about, or the thing that stuck out to me at least, was they've turned down business, and that they look at the ethics of the kinds of projects that are being proposed to them, and then they decide whether they're going to say yay or nay. Then he also said that they have turned down significant rounds of funding from Chinese state-owned enterprises, that they don't do any business in China. So if you are a high-growth company, then what you need to be able to demonstrate to investors is that you are capable of achieving high growth and that you're willing to take business from wherever you can find it, and you want to grow the bottom line, and you want to turn product promise into sales quickly. So if your entire business model is based on creating guardrails for the kinds of business you're willing to take, then you're not going to grow as quickly as the kind of company that doesn't really pay much attention to that. And that's basically what the share price is saying too. So following the initial surge in March, they have gone back below the 200-day moving average, and it's still trending lower. And then we have the kinds of companies that really do have a problem when you think about AI. So, 2U is a provider of software to universities for their online programs. And it was doing exceptionally well all the way up to the peak in 2018 and then collapsed and didn't really perform all. Really performed spectacularly in 2020. Then we had that huge downward dynamic in 2021, and now it is certainly possible that the company could go bust. And Chegg Inc. is another provider of education software, and it halved in here today. So seriously pulling back from the peak in 2021. So there's obviously something to artificial intelligence, and most particularly in the education sphere, or really in the answering of questions. But and then of course the go-to company for artificial intelligence has been NVIDIA. So there was a point that Christopher Wood made in his Greed and Fear report last week was that the number of chips required for artificial intelligence is considerably higher. Then also that the duplicate chips that they've created so that they can sell them into China are less efficient, so therefore they require more of them. So those two factors have been instrumental in the share more than doubling since the beginning of this year. Or I guess not since the beginning of this year, but since the low in October, November. So now it has eased back following the breakout last yesterday. And now the bigger question here is it going to hold this breakout? We've definitely seen that the Nasdaq is pulling back in here today, but it is off its lows. And now the bigger question is whether it is going to hold that 13,000 level. I think the most important thing that we had today were, or I guess, two important things. The first is that the regional banks index continues to decline. So this is another leg lower. And when JP Morgan bought First Republic over the weekend, then they got a pretty good deal on it. So one thing that that is going to do is chasten the appetite of anyone else who wants to buy troubled banks. Much better to wait until the FDIC takes them over than get them for below their asset value. So that suggests that more banks will be allowed to go bust, and there will be fewer bidders willing to step in and assist in a rescue package. Because there were several banks put money into First Republic, and then only one of them got to actually buy the whole bank. So the original investors in or the suppliers of deposits will get their money back. But that's a not really a net gain. And it does look increasingly likely that PacWest will potentially now be among the next to go bust. It was down in really quite a dynamic manner in here today, although off the lows. So what this is also helping to highlight is that there are more than a few banks that are still underwater, still experiencing pressure from the jump in interest rates. What I find especially interesting is that the spread between the 10-year and the 3-month contracted even further today. It was down 24 basis points, down to negative 168. Now the 10-year minus the 2-year is actually trending higher. So what this is very clearly beginning to suggest right now is that the 3-month yield is rising at the moment and that it's not going to last. So let's just put that up because the 3-month yield is now north of 5%. And this was a meaningful move higher in here today. It suggests that investors still think that the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates tomorrow, and potentially that might be a pause, or that they might even still continue to raise rates beyond that. But the one thing is for certain is that we're a year into the hiking cycle now. The yield curve has been inverted for 11 months already. And what we are now starting to see is some signs that economic activity is beginning to wane. So, the number of jobs outstanding was at 12 million back in March of 22, and it's down to 9.5 trillion. So the number of open jobs is contracting. It's a medium-term peak, and it is, I think, quite likely to fully unwind that big surge that we had in the aftermath of the pandemic. Now, it is, I think, also worth just thinking about the fact that you had this huge run higher from approximately 5 to 12 million. And when we look at the jobless numbers, then we get this incredible spike. So, right at the beginning of the pandemic, it went from a quarter of a million, or less than that, in fact, up to 6 million, and then came almost straight back down. But because of the huge amount of money that was printed, well, then demand surged in the economy. Now, if we look here at the number of jobless right now, it is putting in a first step above the base, and it looks quite likely that the next break will be on the upside. So we're starting to see that bond yields are coming down, that the jobless rate is rising, the number of open jobs is contracting, and this is pointing towards a slower global economic environment, it's a slower US economic environment. But then you also have China, and the Hang Seng was in negative territory today, down about 1%. The mainland market is closed. Excuse me, that's incorrect. Futures in Hong Kong are down about 1% right now. The Nikkei is down about 1%, and the mainland market is closed because of the May Day holiday. Now, when we look at the Dow Jones, at one point today, it was down about 600 points, but it has paired that decline in here today. So investors are willing to bet at least that some of the fallout from an increasing number of regional banks going bust will be contained, and it'll be a mitigating factor that might stay the hand of the Federal Reserve in raising interest rates. But there's increasing evidence that China's rebound from the end of its pandemic shutdown is moderating already. And that's purely because they have not flooded the market with liquidity. So China is in no mood to continue to support the global economy. They're looking more instead at ensuring that inflation remains under control domestically and that the renminbi remains steady. China is now using more renminbi for international trade than US dollars, and that's a significant change. And it also helps to suggest why the dollar was down a bit in here today. And it had been up for 3 consecutive days, so this wasn't a d dynamic decline. But the sensitivity that gold has to any weakness in the dollar is, I think, quite remarkable. So gold prices were up $34 in here today, closing back above the psychological $2,000 level. This has been a very mild consolidation in the region of that psychological 2000 level, and it does improve the potential that when it breaks, it's going to break higher in a dynamic manner and then subsequently sustain the move up above this $2000 level. Silver prices were in negative territory yesterday, then rebounded in here today to basically countermand it, and this also looks like a pretty mild consolidation overall. And it continues to hold this break of the medium-term downtrend and is consolidating above the peak from earlier this year. So this does look like a bullish chart. And then the gold shares have also steadied. So I think it is particularly interesting here that the precious metals are doing quite well in an environment where commodity prices generally are under pressure. And oil prices today were down nearly $4. So that's a really quite dynamic move. And it was in response to weaker global economic activity and then also the fact that Iran is increasing supply. And the lower prices go, the more difficult it will be to maintain cohesion in the policies of OPEC Plus. Nobody wants, and nobody within the cartel wants to have lower prices, but just how much pain each is going to is willing to accept is very much open to question. But it wasn't just oil. Copper prices today were also weaker. So we're coming down now to the lower side of this range that's been forming since the beginning of this year. And we're below the $4 level, but if it breaks down through the 380, then that is going to clearly push down into the underlying trading range. And I think that there is certainly the potential that we might see lower prices overall. I think that it is much more likely that we're going to have a volatile price environment for the industrial resources, because I think most of the analysts I've read only concentrate on the growth in demand and the potential that we're going to have an energy revolution, that demand for renewable resources is going to surge, that there won't even be the capacity to increase supply, that they might even have to be rationed in future. And they don't seem to pay any attention to the possibility that we're moving into a recession and that demand will falter, and that a lot of the money that has been promised to go off and build all this new infrastructure won't be nearly as forthcoming, and that we have to go through the recession cycle in order to really boost demand. And at what I'm basically saying is that I think people are starting to put the cart before the horse, that there's an order of operations here, that we are looking at an environment where credit is becoming increasingly restrictive. The potential is that as that bites on the economy and as unemployment rises, they'll have no choice but to cut interest rates. And then subsequently, we can start thinking about a recovery. But not before we see prices coming down first, because demand takes time. If it took a year for rising interest rates to take a toll on the economy, well, then it also takes a year before cutting interest rates has an impact on the wider economy. But we definitely will see, and then, of course, when you think about the yield curve spread, it is after the interest rate cuts that we generally see markets starting to bottom, not before. And interest rates haven't even started to decline just yet. Now, the underperformance we see in the speculative portion of the market, it brings us back to this central question that there is a financial cycle and a technology cycle. There are times when technology is really attractive. There are times when technology is overpriced. And Nvidia is trading on a price to sales ratio that is aggressive by any metric. It's got a price to sales ratio of 26 and a price to book of 31, and its historic PE is 122. The estimated PE is it's about 61. So that's implying that earnings are going to double. And that's assuming, of course, that the price holds stable. And that's also, of course, assuming that all of that spending on artificial intelligence is, in fact, going to happen. And that the promise from artificial intelligence is going to be realized quickly. But I think that there's a lot of open questions about who owns the data that's going to underlie all of this. And how much access will there continue to be? And most particularly, as companies try to build profit models off of the data that they got for free. That's a big question. Whereas, of course, then you have the interest rate cycle. So I think that the times when growth and technology shares are really attractive are generally, when we have low interest rates already. And valuations are attractive. The I think one of the most pressing questions for Taiwan is not so much about what happens in the good times. And the supply of chips is increasing considerably into the face of a declining demand environment from a slowing global economy. And semiconductors are a very significant part of the Taiwanese economy and more importantly, the stock market. And it is pausing here in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, it has clearly broken the sequence of lower valley highs, so this might yet still be just a consolidation. But a time to pay particular attention is if it starts to drop down through it. Now, I think when we look at Taiwan and the increasing geopolitical tension between the USA and China, well, Taiwan can be independent when the economy is thriving. But how likely is it that China is going to be amenable to curtailing exports to China if demand from much of the rest of the world is curtailed in an environment where production has increased? And there is an election coming up, and if that election takes place during a recession, well, then isn't it likely that Chinese people, like everywhere else, will vote with their pocketbooks and perhaps decide they would rather be a little closer to China? Well, if that's the case, then the issue of access to chips and where those chips are manufactured is going to become a lot more relevant. So we're not there yet, but it does look like a potential scenario. Then, when we think about Europe, well, if the dollar is going down, then that should be generally beneficial for European stocks, but they are overbought in the short term. And the most important point to remember is that with credit conditions tightening in the USA and bond yields beginning to contract, then we are in a risk-off environment, and the Wall Street leash effect is still relevant, even if there's a lot of concern right now about de-dollarization. The reality is that the US dollar is the reserve currency and remains so, and that a change away from the reserve currency, if we, and I think this is also important, the dollar was rising in importance relative to the pound for years before the Second World War. And it was really after the Second World War where the USA had basically won and was in a much stronger financial position than everywhere else that it became the reserve currency and was able to enforce its own preeminence and rules-based system on the entire world. Well, that would also imply that even if the renminbi is rising in importance, it would probably require a war in order to change over so that if the renminbi were to then become the reserve currency, China would have to win the war and be in a strong financial position to be able to dictate terms. And we're just not there yet. So I think there the talk about about de-dollarization, it's a trend. It is not a final destination. And we're still very early in that trend. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.